Okay, we're here now for another social marketing hour, and I got a great guest today for you. Somebody's going to teach us about sales, going to teach us about how to generate more revenue with your existing clients and even bring in new clients and get them closed. Alex Schlinski with Prospecting on Demand. Alex, it's a pleasure to have you here in the AGM headquarters, and let's have a great podcast. This is it's going to be a great time with us here talking about sales. And
yes, sir.
What, tell us a little bit about yourself.
First of all, thank you so much for having me. Incredible setup that you have here. Absolutely love it. I'm used to doing a lot of Zoom podcasts, so it's definitely a nice elevation to have this. So I appreciate you having me come out and be a part of this. It's great to have another local Tampan to do a podcast.
It's always great when you can come in here, man. We can get to hang out for a little bit.
The business is so often like on Zoom, so it's really a nice thing to be able to get out of the space and like be with other people. It's a great thing. So yeah, in general, my name is Alex Schlinski. I run a company, Prospecting on Demand. It's a mastermind community for marketing agencies. It's a boutique mastermind purposely because we do very high touch mentorship. So one-to-one accountability, one-to-one custom game plans and goals, focusing on how to develop a better business, create more profitability, more freedom, more fulfillment, etc. That's what I do. We've been doing that since about 2016. Which is pretty long in the agency space. A lot of people kind of move off of their original plans of like doing coaching or creating community into like go to crypto or go to Airbnb rentals or try a different coaching program. But, you know, I've been hard and fast. I'm like, I want to create this community with these types of special people to help them. And it's really amazing what we've created. I'm super grateful for it.
That's awesome. How many people go to these conferences?
So yeah, we do events roughly 3 to 4 times a year. Two of the events are very intimate. So one of them we actually have in my home in Tampa. We do it in the backyard. We'll have probably like 25 of our community members out there. The second event of the year is usually a few guests and our community, so roughly like 60 to 70. And then the big event every year, which is POD Live, that's coming up in September here in Tampa, is going to be roughly about 100 to 120 people.
Wow.
So the entire community, usually 90% will come out. And then we'll have like sponsors that will bring out some of their audience and guests. The event's focus consistently is about quality masterminding time. I hate the idea of people going to events and like they get excited about learning stuff, but then they can't implement everything, right? And so especially so if we're going to be talking about sales a lot today, people want to like listen to me talk about sales and get insights that they can immediately utilize. But there's a reason why the Pareto principle is so, you know, necessary for entrepreneurs. Like, you're not going to be able to take all the insights shared in one podcast, one training, 3-day event and just magically implement all of it. And worse, it might do the exact opposite effect. It might overwhelm you and you do nothing. So 100%. Everything we do at our events is focused on what is a tangible thing that you can do from this that you're going to actually take action on, that you can hold yourself accountable to, so it's not a waste of your time, right? And so every time I'm coaching, every time I'm running an event, the focus is how do we make sure that you have a clear action step from this versus, oh my God, there's so many things to do, I can't possibly do this. So that's why our events are a little bit different in terms of like not doing speaker after speaker. We do a lot of like journaling, workshopping time, networking and masterminding, and all of the speeches that I do, I try to hone in on like, hey, here's 3 things I'm gonna give you. Yes, I could sit here for 10 hours, talk to you about sales, but you're only gonna take a small bit. Here's 3 things, the 80-20, I like to call it the Pareto principle for sales.
Of course.
This is what you have to do to get the biggest impact possible, the smallest hinge that swings the biggest door.
Alex, that is my philosophy. I love what you just said right now. I think it's very valuable. I wanna talk about agencies for a little bit here. Sure. I like the concept of the events. It happens a lot on these big events that there's a lot of ruhahara, excitement, emotion, sure. And then it follows with very little execution. So it's a very good point. You know, there's and one of the oldest quotes in entrepreneurship and in business says the action is the foundation of all success. So you got to figure out how to keep on moving and how to do one step and another step and another step. So I really, really like that the way that you have those things set up. I wanna talk about agencies. I've always said you get to work with a lot of agencies, you help them a lot, you help them succeed. I know some of these companies are doing 10,000, 30, 300,000, et cetera. I always said that the easiest, when people talk about it takes money to make money,
yes,
I always use the example of my agency and how I built it. Because I didn't spend a penny building this agency. And now I have this 3 times Inc. 5000 company and booming organization, 120 employees. And
incredible.
I get to work with a lot of people. We generate many millions of dollars every year. And we're good at what we do. And I started with one thing, just acquisition of knowledge. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. And I used the era of information to really eventually go and acquire one customer that gave me enough trust for me to start running something for them.
Absolutely.
Without them even paying me anything. And I just got started. I proved myself and I was able to start saying, oh, you want more of this? You got to pay me now a little bit.
Right.
And that was the start of my journey. I detailed that on my book because it is, it's such a great model, right? Like, you talk about how you have agencies that come to your events and yep. sometimes you have 100 of them, right? Yep. It's such a big world. Sometimes you don't even realize that, that you might feel like, oh, if I'm helping other agencies succeed, I'm cannibalizing and the market is going to saturate. It is massive,
yeah.
right? It's such a big world out there. The pie is so big that we can help thousands of agencies
absolutely.
Get started. I actually just tell them, this is what you got to do. And a lot of people tell me, Manuel, are you being stupid? Why are you opening up the door for people to come and compete with you absolutely. And take away business? And I'm like, it's because you don't understand how big this world is.
The demand is so high.
It's so high yeah. on a booming market. Like, there's not enough agencies being created to meet the demand in this particular market. Now, Alex, in the agency world, do you work with digital agencies mainly? Or what kind of agencies do you serve?
It's both. So we do work with a few physical agencies, but I would say this type of business, right, AGM is less than the 1%. It's less than 0.5%. Like, it's very uncommon to expect companies like in this space today where you're able to basically run $500,000 a month business. It's totally feasible strictly from one laptop. That is possible. There's many of companies that do this that are 100% going to be only online. I don't know if you know the company Agency Elevation. They're a white label marketing company. They have two owners that live in different states that have literally never met. They just met for the first time, I think, like 3 months ago. They have like more than 1,500 clients. Awesome. The whole business is online, right? So I think the reality is there's a lot of people that are very interested in creating like a local community and having face-to-face interactions. And there's also a lot of people that want to do the digital lifestyle, nomad lifestyle, and have a team separated. I've always gone the digital style, not necessarily as a choice. It kind of just ended up happening. And then the momentum that carried me since we started in 2010 to where we are now, it just kind of never made sense with all the people that I had acquired because they're in different places across the United States to bring them locally. So we do work both with digital agencies and we also work with physical agencies. But I would say the large, large majority are digital and they range in offers, but it's all the same stuff basically. You know, the standard design elements, which we try to like avoid having our clients focus on because it's usually lower hanging fruit, but it not recurring, one time off, et cetera. So we try to have every client create a recurring offer of PPC or some sort of like Facebook ads or Meta ads solution so that they're able to create recurring revenue on a consistent basis and build a foundation. So that's like the main thing. We work with a lot of companies, obviously, that use high level. And so SaaS is becoming very popular. But I want to touch on something you mentioned related to like saturation. The thing is, if you're in the bubble of the marketing world and all that you communicate with consistently is other marketers and the problems that they have, inherently it's going to create a bias in your mind that it's very saturated and I have no chance to make this work and I can't do it by myself and I need to spend all this money to make it happen. And the truth is, as you noted, like the demand in terms of the amount of businesses that need marketing so far outweigh the number of agencies, right? And so I just want to contend to people that are interested still in the biz op side of things, or they've already passed biz op, like they're in it, but they've been struggling to get past 5 or 10 or 15K a month consistently because of saturation. It's not because of saturation. You have to change the mindset and consider what's audacity sales. And that's the framework that I like going by. It's like, what are you willing to do that the market saturation is not willing to do? So yeah, you're probably right. There is a lot of cold emails going to the local roofer that you're reaching out to. It's probably true, right? It's probably true. There's a lot of cold calls being done to the local med spa that you're also cold calling, right? They're getting a lot of same offers. How many people are going in person with donuts? How many people are sending direct mail? How many people are asking them to come to an event or willing to sponsor something that they're doing? How many of you are doing unique things? And the idea that every I has been dotted and T has been crossed across the space is ludicrous. It would be outrageous. Yes, there's some things that are probably saturated, but never in a way that means that you're not able to grow or scale. And I think that's a really important thing.
So it's always how to think outside the box.
100%.
Period.
Absolutely.
How to do something that other people are not comfortable doing.
100%.
And that's a great, great point and great advice that for anybody that wants to succeed in this particular area. Yeah. What is something that you could do that you know most people are not going to do?
Yeah.
In the agency world, how easy would it be to be like, listen, just let me prove myself. Yeah. Don't pay me a penny. I don't want to see a penny from you. Let me do this for 2 weeks. I'm going to generate a bunch of leads for you. I'm going to come back to you and you're going to tell me that you want to keep on going. And then we're going to get into a contract or an agreement, right? Like there's things that you can do. I actually like what you said also about like who's taking donuts, who's showing up in the doors, who's knocking doors. I mean, who's doing a lot of the traditional path.
Very
few
amount.
Right,
in terms of the trial thing, I want to touch on this because it's really important related to the sales aspect, and like especially beginners, people default to trial right away because it's easier and they don't want to step into discomfort of what they are in their mind is an argument, which is not an argument, it's a convincing of why this is the best fit. The idea of sales, like in terms of not being a charlatan, being a good salesperson, believing in your product, is a very simple framework. It's, do you believe in what you have to offer, right? Does Manuel believe that AGM is the right fit for their ideal client? Inherently, of course, the answer is yes. But a company much smaller than Manuel, you know, let's say a Derek who works with roofers, Derek helps roofers run ads on Google, and he's kind of confident. Well, if he's kind of confident, it's going to come across in his sales process, and he's not going to be able to sell. You can't fake confidence, because when you fake confidence, that's how snake oil salesmen are created. And some people have that ability. Those are called con men. And some people don't have that ability. Those people are authentic. When you are not confident in what you do, that's when you're going to leverage trials. To express like, look, everyone starts at zero. No one just magically starts with a studio and 50 clients and a $200,000 a month agency. No one does that. Everyone starts with no clients, right? And whether we want to be like, oh, well, they had a spoon-fed client to them, and it doesn't matter you versus them. It's only you versus you. That's the only thing that matters. For your circumstances, what matters? If you are not confident that your product can deliver, then you're going to go with the trial model. That's going to be an easy angle because you get to be transparent saying, look, I believe that I'm going to get you results, but you don't have to pay me anything. Just risk the money on the ads. And when we get this result that we agree upon, that's when you're going to pay me more. And that key piece is the success KPI that most people forget, not just in trials, in all sales, in everything related. You want to make sure that the person that you are selling and the salesperson itself are on the exact same page as what is defined as a win, especially so if you're doing it for no dollars. So if you go to a roofing company and you say, I'm going to do a free trial for you, and they're like, okay, well, what exactly are you going to do? You're like, well, we're going to run ads on Google and on Facebook. I need you to put down $1,000 on ad spend. Don't pay me a cent. When I get this result, X, which we'll talk about, that's when you're going to continue. It's important that X is clarified and you have control of X. If you're like, we're going to get you 5 re-roofs, what if the salespeople on their team have no idea how to handle leads? They might not have that. And anyone watching this podcast that has been in the space for some time has, no matter what, lost at least one client, if not many, by saying these leads suck, when truly it's just they have no process at all.
They don't have process.
They don't have any process.
But it comes back to the marketing company.
100%. Every time they're going to be the ones to be blamed, right? Because they're a vendor. So if you go to them and say, look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get you 5 qualified leads in the next week. 5 qualified leads are determined by these stipulations. We're going to have their name, their email, their phone number, their interest level in terms of urgency, and what job or project they need, a re-roof or a replacement or a repair, right?
Physical address.
We're going to give you the insight that you're looking for. If we get you 5 of those for this amount of money, where you could potentially close one and make 10 grand, would you then agree to pay me $2,000 a month to do this? And that's if they say yes, then the trial's in place. That's good. If you don't give your success KPI, here's what could happen. And this happened to me. When I started doing trials, I did it for a gym in Vero Beach. I went to the gym and I'm super excited. We generated them like whatever, 90 something leads. I'm like, this is amazing. I crushed it. I'm going in feeling like hot shit. Go in and they're like, hey, you're fired. This was terrible. It didn't work. We don't want to pay you. Yada, yada. I'm like, what happened? They didn't close anyone, right? Their success KPI was more members. My success KPI was leads. Now, someone can listen to this and be like, well, isn't that obvious? The thing is that the obvious stuff, right, kind of slips away when you get stuck in the format of sales. You're like, well, obviously they want leads. They know that I'm not the one that controls whether or not they become members. But that's not as obvious as you might think it is. And so that clarity of having a success KPI is so important, not just for anything related to trials, but anything related to sales period. And just to circle back to wrap up this trial comment related to agencies that already have established growth, if you are confident in your product, you should not be going in and offering trials to anyone upfront.
Especially if you have results,
100%,
right? 100%.
Because too often people are like, oh, well, it would just be easier if I prove it first. It's like you've already proved it with the number of clients you've succeeded with already. You just have to do the hard work, the uncomfortable work of telling someone to work with you based off of it would be a mistake. And if you have this capability in your mind that your agency can truly support the clients that you work with, you need to tell to the prospect, look, if we fast forward 90 days into the future, it would be the biggest mistake you've made to not invest in this. It's a no-brainer. You're going to get the results, but you got to try. Because if you don't, one of two things are going to happen. You're either going to stay in the exact same spot, which is means either you're going to move backwards because your competition are ahead, or you're just going to stay stagnant. Or number two, you're going to find some other person that's a marketing agency to come to you and either offer you something that you think is better, but likely won't be because we're the best in the world at what we do. And people be like, oh, but I don't want to say we're the best in the world. It's like, if you don't believe that, why should anyone buy from you?
Of course.
Inherently, they're like, oh, I don't want to be arrogant or cocky. It's like, you don't control that. You don't control how they're perceiving you, right? I'm going to say a hot button topic here, okay? Everyone listening to the podcast knows who Donald Trump is, obviously, right? We're not going to get into politics, but it's a pretty simple understanding of how perception works psychologically. Donald Trump does a speech, okay? One group of people are like, this is the worst person in the entire planet, right? Mm-hmm. An entire other group of people are like, this is the best person ever. No, it's not like media spin. It's not, it's the same film. Nothing's edited, exactly the same words. How does that happen? It's from perception. So one salesperson might be like, I'm being super confident, but the person you're selling is like, this guy's an arrogant asshole. And another person's like, this dude's so confident, I wanna buy from him. You don't control perception, you control intention. You gotta go with confidence. This is the most important element. So just some of the elements I wanted to make sure is shared.
That's fire. It's what makes a salesperson a powerhouse.
100%.
It's what makes the Wolf of Wall Street. They are confident.
100%.
They know their business. They believe in themselves. They go after it. They sell it. You know, like the good old, like, can you sell this pen, right? Like, it's quite incredible that this thing, when it's not really implemented in a sales team, the sales team suck, and then you wonder what's going on. It's just lack of confidence. They don't really believe in themselves. 100%. They don't believe in the organization. They don't believe in the results. They don't know the results. They might not know even the culture of the company and their ability to produce results. So then they're expecting this client to come in and pay them money, which in the case of agencies, like in my case, you cannot pay me less than 50K a year. You can't pay me. I cannot work for your brand unless you get into a $50,000 a year contract. Most people cannot do that.
Right.
So unless I have the confidence to go in there and be like, this is what's going to happen, people are not going to accept that invitation.
100%.
As simple as that.
100%.
Most agency owners, the ones that are just getting started, they are in the biz op world. They have maybe themselves and their sister to work with or whatever, they can charge $1,000. And that's great. Great business. That's how you start. That's how I started. The first client, I think, was paying me $250 a month for something very small a long time ago. But confidence is such an important thing that it's just not worked on. You mentioned success KPIs. I love that. And you talked about success KPIs in regards to trials. But success KPIs applies to anything.
Everything.
Right? So whenever you bring a client on board, I always say, I want to hear what your thoughts are on this. And in the agency world, I always say that this is the sequence of priorities. Mm-hmm. Number one, expectations. Number two, communications. Number three, results. Mm. And the reason I say that is whenever somebody comes in to your agency and you're going to deliver services to these people, they are going to expect something from you. If you don't set those expectations from the beginning, and you give them a time frame for being able to accomplish that, these people are going to get upset really fast.
100%.
Now, there's a thing called communication. Communication buys you time. If you communicate to people enough, they will give you patience.
100%. And playing offense is the best defense.
Oh, my God. It's so important. Like, I've lost many accounts over the years. I wish I could tell you that I've been perfect.
No one is perfect. I am not perfect.
I had an initial, the first couple of years building an agency, I was super proud of myself because nobody had fired me ever. And I was like, and I used to talk about that. I don't talk about that anymore.
Yeah, for
especially
sure.
Especially as it's I grew impossible. And we became
less
hundreds of employees.
You have also.
I wasn't handling the accounts myself. 100%. So we lost the control, lost the quality.
I want to touch on that. What I tell people, Manuel, related to like success rates, like a lot of people cap themselves in growth because they're afraid of failing, right? They're afraid of giving something off to an employee, whether it's sales or retention, client success management, fulfillment. They're concerned that they give it off and then the client doesn't get the result and they're dissatisfied. And to me, it's like, we should look at it in the exact opposite way. So I'll tell you something you might not know about me. 2.5 years ago, I had open heart surgery. I'm good now, but I have a mechanical heart valve. I'm basically Iron Man. I had it my wife was 5 months pregnant with our first child, which is totally crappy. 0 out of 5 stars. Do not recommend heart surgery. But what it did was give me consideration of the stakes that they're playing, right? The stakes that my heart surgeon is playing is not the idea of like, oh, well, whatever, I'll like hand it off to the junior surgeon. Like if Alex dies, he dies. Like whatever, big deal. Obviously, that's not the scenario. They are in a scenario where they can't fail, period, ever. And guess what? They still do sometimes, right? Thankfully, it didn't for me, but they're human beings.
Yeah, right.
It's going to happen. When I talk about agencies, it's like, at the end of the day, you need to consider what you're doing, right? It's not diminishing the value you're bringing, but it's like, if you work with a local attorney and the attorney's paying you $3,000 a month, they paid you $9,000 or $10,000 or whatever in 3 months, and it didn't work out, so be it. Like at the end of the day, like if you purposely misled them and you didn't try at all, then yeah, you're a piece of crap, whatever, fine. But if you gave your effort, you tried really hard and ultimately it just didn't work out. It's like, why are you beating yourself up over it? Any prerequisite to success is going to be some level of failure, some level of mistake. That's the only way we can grow. And so the people that are clutching at the pearls of like, I'm going to magically, like Atlas, carry the weight of this entire business. I'm going to do all the prospecting, all the sales, all the fulfillment, all the client success management. And then they lose sight of what was the entire purpose of the business in the first place, which was initially they're like, I want a nomadic life and I want to create, you know, time freedom. I want to make money and I want to help people, right? Like they always say like, first, I want to help people, as if being selfish for your desires is some bad thing, like has some negative connotation. There's nothing negative about wanting to do better for yourself and your family and your community. Yes. Also, by doing so, you're helping other people, which is great. That's a wonderful thing. But in general, the idea that the stakes are so high, I just don't like that mindset. I think it's way too dangerous because then you're putting yourself in accordance to the same idea of like, you know, a pilot crashing, killing half the people on board and be like, whatever, I'll do better next time. That doesn't happen. That can't happen. If you crash and burn on a PPC campaign, you learn from it. That's nothing right. Bad's going to happen.
100%.
And I think that's like a really important mindset issue that I see so many agencies, not necessarily just struggling agencies, like people making 30, 40 grand a month that want to grow more, but it's like, how? It's like, you hand off and you fail, right? You hand off and you fail. That's just part of it. It's not like you're going to hand off and magically everyone does it at the exact same rate as you. It's not going to happen.
Or otherwise, you're going to be stuck forever.
100%.
If you don't figure out how to hand off and fail and learn along the way,
you're going to be stuck. 100% agree.
And stay small, which is not what you want to do in an agency. You want to grow. You want to expand. You want to put yourself in uncomfortable spots and figure it out on the way, which is, I never did a course or training on how to build an agency. That's for sure. I got very obsessed over delivering results to the clients that I had on board.
Yes.
And that led towards other people finding out and discovering what I was doing.
Absolutely.
That spread the word. And then I started doing my social media content. That's been an important part of it, and building my audiences and webinars and stuff like that. But I never did a course. I had been figuring out along the way. Platforms like High Level and other things that we're using right now, it's new to my world of agency for sure. But anyways, lots to learn in this particular area for sure. Just an important point for anybody that wants to go down a journey of building a business. This is all applicable to a service business really well, and also to selling. I like the whole success KPIs very much. It's important for you to have clearly established what is the key performance indicators that you have.
Absolutely.
For that particular client. And how long is it going to take you to accomplish that?
Yep.
Those are the expectations, and then just work towards accomplishing that. Get results, get enough results on top of you, and off you go to the races to grow. Alex, let's talk about sales for a few minutes, all right? We still got a few minutes to go. Let's say, you know, I can tell you my experience, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, because you have dealt with a lot of agencies, a lot more than me. In the world of selling, I can tell you that my best salespeople in my marketing company are the marketers. Whenever I try to hire a salesperson and I train them as sales, they don't perform as well as the guys that are delivering services. What is your opinion on that subject? The more I try to actually hire people that like, hey, you're just going to be a salesperson. We have a world of services. Like we do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Amazon, e-commerce, Shopify, website build outs. We do one-time projects. We artificial intelligence stuff. We do all kinds of crazy things. We do a lot of retainers. That's our number one thing that we do over here. And as whenever I try to build the sales team, they just don't perform as well because the ones that really convince prospects that the opportunity is big is the ones that are marketers.
Yeah, absolutely.
How would you train these guys to become a real sales machine of marketing services?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I have a differing opinion, which I think will be very valuable to hear. So my first thought is making sure that in semantics, when we talk about sales, that we're talking about the way that I level out what salespeople are. If we break down and oversimplify a business, there's three steps for growth, right? Again, huge oversimplification, but it helps to kind of clarify what box we're in. Number one, you need to book sales calls. Number two, you need to close those deals and make them clients. And number three, you need to service those clients, right? Those three elements. The thing is, when you consider that two of the elements are combined as client acquisition, meaning booking calls and closing deals, what people do is they don't say that that's client acquisition, they say that's sales. For me, what I frame as very important is appointment setters or prospectors are one section, and salespeople dedicated to closing are a separate section. There's lots of agencies, both digital and physical, that most of them combine. What I've found in consulting and corporate consulting that I've done is the sales rate explodes when you separate appointment setters and salespeople, because what you're really probably doing is anchoring very talented salespeople by having them do cold calling or LinkedIn outreach or some sort of follow-up that's not really good versus if you're doing inbound and you have quality calls, these people are killers. Get them on the phone, right? So that's first comment.
So you have a setter that their job is to get people on a Zoom call.
That's right.
And they might get paid or a commission structure.
Yeah, usually the way that I structure the payments, it obviously depends on agency growth. But in general, normally it's like a certain KPI related to number of calls booked. Let's say, 10 calls booked, they get, $20 per call, they get $200. And then it's a scale that grows. So the next 10, they would get $250 instead.
But if they show 10, up, right? If they
show up. 100% if they show up, because that means they're selling the call, which we can talk about as well. And then after, you do set closes. So if they set someone up with Dan, the salesperson, and Dan closes them, the appointment setter gets a set close percentage. Usually that percentage is roughly 5%. That's usually what we see in the space. It can vary, but that's usually what it is. And now the appointment setter's job is strictly focused on appointment setting, creating opportunities.
So 5% of whatever the close was, yes, the ticket.
Cash collected is usually what
cash
we do.
Collected.
Yeah, yeah.
But you also gave another 10% to the closer.
Could be 10%, could be 15%, could be 20. It just depends. But right. Yeah, in general, that's usually the move. Yeah.
I see.
And so for agencies, the reason we do this is it increases efficiency because as you just noted, the biggest crux and challenge for salespeople is variability, right? I'll give you a quick example here and you guys, anyone listening can play along. Okay. Manuel, do you want a Snickers?
Not a big fan of it.
Okay. How many options did I give you?
Just one.
How many options did you have to respond, though? You could have said three things. Could have said yes, could have said no, and you could have said maybe.
Maybe.
And maybe is veiled as anything in sales. Maybe is I need to talk to my partner. Can I have some time to think about it? I need to move some money around. Any of those things are maybe, right? Obviously, the majority of sales conversations end with a maybe. Very few of them
That's
end
right.
with no, and even fewer end with yes. The majority of them are some amorphous maybe. Right, veiled as whatever term they're using. If you consider that format, think about this then. What if I ask you, do you want a Snickers or do you want a Twix? How many options did I give you?
You got one more. You got two.
But how many options do you have to respond?
Six. Got six now.
You could have said yes, no, maybe to Snickers. Yes, no, maybe to Twix. And also the arithmetic or calculus that's undefinable, which is the worst part of selling, compare and contrast. Now you're like, well, Snickers has the nougat and Twix has the wafer. They both have chocolate. And now how does the person make a decision? Because they're in the process of delineating between compare and contrast and multiple options. And so when you are saying at AGM that we have so many offers, I wouldn't say that the reason why salespeople alone that are hired are struggling versus marketers, it's because marketers have more clarity on the options. Salespeople want to limit the options, right?
Marketers understand the subject a lot better.
100%.
They can ask a couple questions 100%. And be able to tell them exactly what they need.
But here's the thing that you think might be shocking to you. I don't want my marketer selling, ever. The reason why is they get too into nitty-gritty details because they're nerding out about it that the person doesn't care about. Here's the other consideration, okay? If you have your toilet break, no bad juju to you, by the way, hopefully your toilet doesn't break. If you have your toilet broken, okay, and you call the plumber, and the plumber says to you, I could fix it in one of three ways, Manuel, okay? I could fix it with my hand, I could fix it with a vacuum, or I could fix it with a snake. What do you think you're likely going to say?
I'll say the snake, probably.
Really? You think you would define exactly what tool?
Oh, well, you know.
Do you know what a snake is? Is that why you said that?
No. Let's go back. Well, I know what a snake is.
Right? Yeah. But like, most people sometimes will be like, the animal?
Yeah.
The expression it's and reason a, I bring
know,
it up.
You know, the reason why I thought about a snake right away is because you keep your hand clean. You just press the button.
Sure.
Off we go.
But it's not you. But that's
the correct
doing the
answer should be, I'm paying you to do your job. You
exactly.
figure out
exactly
what the
exactly.
right thing to do is.
Most people would say, I don't care. I just want it done as fast as possible, as inexpensive as possible, and I don't want it to break again. And that's the same format when we're talking about the service. 99% of businesses do not care at all, whether it's PPC advertising, meta advertising, direct mail, in-person, Harry Potter owls, magic abracadabra, black magic. They don't care.
They
as long as it's legal,
results.
As long as it's results-driven, and they feel they're being represented well. And so when marketers get stuck on calls talking about all the differentiating factors, it increases the timeline in which closes are. So
we should do a TikTok channel, and we should be doing this, and YouTube 100%. Ads pre-roll. 100%. And maybe, you know, we got an email sequence that we need
then
to put in place.
And then it becomes very overwhelming, because now they have to compare and contrast all these things, versus they get on a sales call with someone like myself or my trained students, and I'm telling them, this is the result we're getting. This is how we're going to get it for you. But that's not relevant, because the thing that matters is the result. That's what you want. Here's how we've done it many times. We simplify this because we're the experts. That's what you're paying us for. And what that does is it alleviates tension and stress, because a lot of people making decisions have no idea what they're doing. There is, of course, companies that like know too much for their own good. I've tried ads myself. I worked with this many agencies, etc. But those are not the consistent majority. They are the very small minority. The majority are these people that are good at what they do, right? They're attorneys or they're doctors or they're roofers or they're estheticians or whatever it is, but they don't know how to run a business. They know how to do the service. And now you're coming in here saying, making bold promises that they've heard before, that they're going to magically be able to get this result. And now they feel like they have this responsibility to know how it works. And the easiest leverage point is just using their business against them, which is like, if you're talking to a roofer, do I really need to know about the exact 25-step process that you're doing to put my roof on? No, I need to know some very basic things like the colors of the tiles and the price and how long it's going to take, right? I don't need to know the 25-step process. And when you tell that to a roofer, immediately opens their mind to realizing, I don't care how you get me the result. I just want the result. You're confident you get me the result? Okay, cool. I want the result. So simplifying options, focusing on result instead is the answer. So directly to your question though, Manuel, for your team, my recommendation would be, if we have a list of services, right? Every service should have a very clear direct result, right? So obviously the mechanism, using the plumbing metaphor, snake, hand, or vacuum, right? All have the same result. Fixed toilet. Right?
It flushes.
What are the results for each of your packages? You'll probably end up realizing that if you have, let's say, 20 packages, you probably only have like 6 results though. And they'll be bucketed into whatever is best for the client. And that's the way that I usually coach sales.
Yeah. So whether you get more traffic or you're looking for branding or
exactly.
you want a booming Amazon brand or you exactly. want to get your e-commerce going or whatever that is, very detailed and very specific and very simplified.
Results driven is the key.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like it. So let's say in your case, Alex, what do you have to sell me? Tell me, what would you sell me as a marketing agency owner?
So two things that I specifically do. One, for larger companies, I do corporate sales consulting. So I've done it for The Hoth and some other pretty large agencies that are doing, you know, over $2 million per month. Because when you have that size of company, like some small nuanced changes to the sales team, if you get a percentage increase of 5 or 10% on close rates over a 3-month span, it's a huge amount of additional recurring revenue and opportunity, which we did a great job with The Hoth. I think we increased the rate by like 11% in 90 days, which is very, very good.
In our case, we are a 700,000 to 800,000 a month agency.
Yeah. Opportunity to go from 700,000 to 800,000, depending on the close rate percentage. Like if on average, the close rate is roughly like 22% and the timeline that it takes is you know, on average 3 weeks. If you simplify that timeline to a 1 week span and you're able to go from 22% to 30%, which is not a huge increase, the amount of mathematical growth though is astronomical. We're talking about some massive opportunity for growth. That's what I'm talking about with small hinges swinging big doors. So that's number one thing that I love doing.
So let me tell you, all cards on the table, all right? So, because I'm going to get value here from you in this public environment in which people are watching me talking about my problems in my company. Because I love transparency. I have growth problems, right? Like, I have great problems.
So everyone has problems.
I'm growing, but there's areas that I could get better with.
Sure.
I have a supplement company called Natural Slim that does $85 million a year.
Hell yeah.
It has a lot of problems because I don't get to all the phone calls. Like, I literally have somewhere around 600 phone calls that I can't answer every day. It's a great problem to have, right? Like, so we have a combination of, we have a call center that has 100 consultants on the phone.
Oh my God. All right. Still have 600 missed?
We still have 600 missed. All right.
Daily?
Every day. Oh, man. We get 2,000 phone calls that are incoming and we get 1,400 of those taken care of.
Wow.
And we lose anywhere from 300 to 800 phone calls.
Do you have missed call text back automation?
We do have all that in place. Okay, cool. We do have all that in place. Yeah. We have remote teams. We were a company that was built for the COVID environment.
Smart.
It was unintentional, but when COVID hit, we went from 10 million to 20 to 40 to this year 85. Just amazing. Like that. Boom.
Congrats. It's awesome.
So it's great, but it still has that problem. Now we are 40% Amazon, 30% e-commerce, 30% call center. That's what we have those problems there. In the agency, which is, you're in this same building where you're at right now. Mm-hmm. The front half is Natural Slim.
Yeah, I saw it when
you saw that. And then this is the marketing agency here. Over here we have warehouse. You'll see here supplements and all the things that we have going on. Pretty incredible business. I mean, it's still got to pinch myself because this business, I built it from the ground up with my father.
Amazing, dude.
He passed away 2.5 years ago. Sorry. We're still spreading his legacy. Thank you. And we have a very large following, which is part of like my one of my greatest accomplishments. I detailed that in my book. We have a following in the 40 million range.
Amazing.
One of the biggest, largest social media followings. For sure, Latin American, we are the largest one.
So awesome.
We have a big YouTube channel, et cetera. So great. AGM's number one client for my marketing company, you want to guess who it is? The supplement company.
Mm.
All right. It's my number one client. All right. They pay us the most amount of money. And then we have a lot of other clients and a lot of other accounts. Let me tell you my problem.
Tell me.
That I have in the marketing company. And I want to see how you would help me solve it.
Please.
Right. We are built on my personal brand. I don't have clients that don't know who I am.
Mm.
My clients are either people that follow my story, follow my content, see my webinars, see my seminars, somehow been connected with me,
yeah,
or have been referred by other clients. I have a client who's one of my biggest ones. His name is Dr. Eric Berg. He's the largest ketogenic diet influencer on the planet.
Awesome.
11 million subscribers. We built this guy up from the beginning stages. For 6 years, I've been with him. When he started with me, he was very small, 100,000 subscribers, which is not small, but still, he gets 100,000 a week now. it's pretty crazy. And we built his social media world, and he's built an empire. He produces about $100 million a year. It's amazing. And he's one of our greatest accomplishments. He has referred other clients. So I have either people that are following me on social media or people that are referred by some of these clients that are doing really good with us. And mm-hmm. we are really good at what we do.
Sure.
With Amazon and e-commerce and social media strategies and omnipresence and managing content distribution and creation of content. We're damn good at it.
Love it.
What I don't have, Alex, is a sales process.
Mm.
To get people introduced to Attention Grabbing Media, our marketing company, and get them to not be skeptical and accept our invites.
Yeah.
My experience has been, and I know you have met with a lot of people and you have worked with a lot of agencies that actually have this figured out.
Yeah.
They sell services every day or courses to people that don't know who the heck they are,
mm-hmm.
and they trust them enough. How can you help me crack that? Because I will pay you.
I can lay out a game plan right now for you.
I will pay you whatever you have to offer to build a system that is not dependent on this body.
Yeah.
All right? Even though I like it.
Yeah.
I like the stage. You can see, like,
dude, me too. I love it.
This
also.
Environment, right? I love 100%. The stage. I like yeah. talking to people. I've been doing this for 7 years now, yeah. nonstop.
There has to be a way where it's not just you as the face.
I would love to walk by some of these marketers and they're having meetings because, as you know, you're in my building right now. These guys have their own
doing their own thing.
They're doing their own thing. I would love to walk by some of these meetings and have them say, "Oh, this is Manuel.
Yeah,
he's our CEO. Oh, your CEO. I had no idea you even had a CEO."
Totally no.
In our case, I have people that are, you know, it's always they're starstruck by me. "Oh, Manuel. Absolutely. Oh my God. I would like to get away from that."
Yeah.
Not that I would like to get away.
You don't want it to be the only.
Feel, Alex. We're an Inc. 5000 company. We're growing. We're 8 digits already a year. Like we're doing all these things that are great, amazing. But in order to get to 9 digits, in order to get to $100 million mark and more, I need to have a process in place.
100%.
I need to have a process in place. What's my game plan? How the heck can you help me? You obviously know how to do this yourself or you've seen it.
Yeah. So I'll break down like 3 main strategies at the top level, and then we can dive into more detail on any of them that you like, on or off. Either way is fine with me. So the 3 main strategies that you just referenced would be your personal brand, which is the carrying the load, like significantly. We'll talk about that. Then there's 2 other main strategies, which is going to be inbound advertising, generating opportunities inbound. Inbound can come from sponsorships. Advertising, of course, is the most common, not just digital advertising, traditional advertising as well, yada, yada, so and so. Referrals could be considered inbound. Normally it is as well. And then outbound. And outbound is all the stuff that we've spoken about related to, you know, prospecting on Facebook and LinkedIn and all meta sources and email, cold emails and doing direct mail and going in person and going, et cetera, all these elements, right? Those are the 3 core elements. For each one, I'll break down a simple process that I think would be extremely valuable. But in terms of working together, I would love to just audit what's being done for the 80-20 principle, right? Like a lot of companies of this size just do dumb shit because they don't see like the time being wasted because of opportunity cost, right? And so it's like throwing money at the problem isn't always the best scenario. The best scenario is evaluating the data. And like, what does the data say on each of these opportunity costs? Because if we're having, like I said, appointment setters doing sales work or salespeople doing appointment setting work, that's a huge like immediate lever that could change the entirety of the business structure and make you grow way faster. In terms of the personal brand format, I think there's an easy solution for you. You need to look around your office, right? And identify who is the person that would take over, right? Now, I'm gonna be a little bit more morbid here, but I think the can of worms needs to be opened up because it's necessary. When I got sick, essentially, which we can talk about another time, when I found out that I had to have the surgery, it put me in the same position of what you're talking about, which is the truth is my business is also, it's me. I'm the one that does the podcast. I'm the one that speaks at the events. I'm the one that's doing all the, you know, social media outreach, right? And if people don't know me, they're probably not working with me, right? It's just probably not the scenario. It happens sometimes, but it's not consistent, right? What do you have to do to fix that, right? And so what we have to identify is, if God forbid I died, right, what would have happened to the company? It likely would have died. I mean, that's just the truth, right? Now, it could have been different, but that's because I didn't set up scenarios. And then since in the last 2.5 years, that's what I've done, set up processes. And the easiest thing to do is you look around the office, you identify who is someone that we can promote as having their own show, their own platform, their own opportunity to start running the ship on AGM, right? If you consider this as a cruise ship, right, and you're running a whole cruise ship, a massive, massive endeavor, right? They're not gonna just be able to steer the cruise ship right away. But what if they start with the dinghy, and then the dinghy becomes a small yacht, and then the small yacht becomes a fairly large yacht, and then the yacht becomes an entirely new cruise? And that's totally feasible because you have the capabilities of doing it. But here's the thing that allows you to be most successful. You don't do it with one person, you do it with 3 to start. And the audience is going to tell you which one they resonate with, right? You'll see it with probably the most popular YouTuber on the planet, Mr. Beast, right? He does this exact format where he's clearly the face of the business, but all of his team members have massive channels as well because he's giving them their small version of the yacht to start right. steering the ship. And so if you have a new weekly show that's with Donna Summers, and Donna is now going to start attracting her own audience because of her own panache and her own style, that's how slowly but surely you're going to be able to get out. But there is no format in which there's just like a ripcord and instantaneously you can step out and someone else is going to step in. That would be a fallacy. It's not.
It's a
happen.
Journey. It's a, you know, how do it's you scale the unscalable?
100%. And what I would be doing is clarifying, like, what's the financial goal? What's my time goal? What would I want to do specifically? And then from that, identifying what's the appropriate resources to take from current team management and start implementing efforts and resources to invest in that person of, hey, we want you to become a face of X. Whatever X is, maybe it's just one part of the business, sponsorships, events, PPC or YouTube, whatever it is specifically. So that'd be my thoughts on the personal branding side. We can talk more about that in general. The outreach and outbound prospecting. To me, the number one thing I would do is I would look at the data of these current team members and identify who's closing at a higher rate. I make those people strictly closers and set the people that are closing at the lowest rate to appointment setters. I really think that would make a massive difference. It's the same thing that I did at the Hoth. They kind of implemented it a little bit, but they have a little bit more unique scenarios where, like, they kind of have like siloed agency. It's not really relevant for this conversation, but in general, interesting to consider. For outbound prospecting, I'd be considering what's the biggest bang for your buck. To me, the thing that's most missed out on, and I was just sharing this with, I think his name is Jorge, your CMO, I think it is. Mm-hmm. I would be doing outbound prospecting through boots on the ground approach. Have you done any boots on the ground approach? And okay, check this out. Anyone that is listening to the podcast, you are about to hear a $10 million framework for $0. You can do it too. And it's really easy. It just takes a little bit of hard work in terms of consistency.
I love it.
This is the model. Right now, you're in St. Pete area, right? Largo, technically.
Tampa Bay area.
Yeah. Around us is probably like 2 to 3 pretty decent sized schools, right? We got St. Petersburg College, we have Tampa University, and then obviously USF, which is the big university. Each one of them will have their own section of business schools, whether it's like psychology that you want to consider or business or marketing. Any three of those work because those are usually where the entrepreneurs come from. Business, psychology, or marketing. Normally. Not every single time, but normally that's what you'll see, right?
Definitely not me.
Yeah. So you're not going to go to like the law school and be like, these are the people that are going to start closing for my agency. It's not going to happen. You go there and you find the person that runs that school, right? The director of that portion of the school. You ask them about internship programs that they have. Some do, some don't. You ask them that you're looking to get 4, 5, 10 interns that you want to send out locally, boots on the ground, to represent a $10 million, $20 million, $50 million company on their behalf to go in person with donuts to local business to make a special offer. What you're going to end up finding is a lot of them will suck ass, excuse my French, but they'll be really bad, but there's going to be some incredible diamonds in the rough. I worked with an agency. This was not originally my idea. I worked with an agency that was making about $7 million a year. That was the only way they grew their business. And he told me when he explained this to me, I was mind blown, right? And so I've recommended this to a few agencies. As you can imagine, most don't do it because of the required timeline to do it. But the ones that have had unbelievable results because of the format of Audacity Sales. Everyone's doing cold calling. Everyone's doing LinkedIn messaging. Everyone's doing cold emailing. Everyone's doing, you know, outreach.
Door knocking
is a totally different thing, but it's not Manuel that does it. It's not anyone in this office that does it. It's frankly free labor because there are interns. They get credit for this. Now, it depends on the internship. Some of them you're allowed to pay, some you're not. That has to be dependent on the school. But if you can also incentivize through payment, you're going to get better quality people.
You give them the money for 100%. Them to, I don't know, cover their gas expenses, the donuts or whatever.
And also for set closes. If they book anything and they close a deal, you can pay, but it has to be allowed by the internship. Some people go around the internship model and take the same idea through groups on Facebook. There's always groups for like class of 2026 UT or class of 2026 USF. Go in there. Hey, I run a $10 million marketing agency. I'm looking for 20 people to pay $500 a week or a $200 a week to do X, Y, and Z. Here's what your structure could look like. Is anyone interested? You're going to get a lot of people really interested, right? There's a lot of very interested college students that are very interested and want to have the hunger, but they don't know how to do this. You give them the format to do it, you can reach over 500 businesses easily in the Tampa area, just like that.
Yeah, and in the marketing game, in the agency world, you can deliver services at a very low cost.
100%.
Sell $500, $1,000 packages.
100%.
And be profitable.
So my agency is a personal injury attorney agency. The first 10 clients outside of my referrals, because I had a good amount of referrals from my local community. But outside of that was me in person. I went to UCF in Orlando, very large school. I literally just went to every single attorney's office I could for 2 years straight. I think I probably went to 50 attorney's offices in Orlando. It's the number one biggest city in the world for PI attorneys because of Disney. So accidents every second of the day. So in general, I would just go, bring donuts, And just, I knew it's so much harder to say no to me in person than it is on the phone, because I know that I'm charismatic. I know I'm really good at what I do, and I'm very passionate, and I'm very, very capable of expressing with transparency, like, look, I'm trying to help my family. The only way I could do it is by stepping out of my comfort zone. I'm here. I'm stepping out of my comfort zone. Give me the shot. Give me the chance. Let me show you what I could do. And the wishy-washy, and you just close it with this. It's like, how many people have called you? How many have emailed you? How many came into your office? Maybe twice of like 50 times. Oh, well, this guy came in last week. All right, fine, whatever. My point is kind of not as valid. But when you say that and no one comes into the office, it's sharp as a knife. You're like, you know what? You're different. Let's go. I'm ready.
And if you're backed up by an award-winning agency
that has 5,000
Google reviews by the hundreds of people talking about great things about 100%. You have all this strength to back you up.
It's huge. It's a massive thing.
That's
great.
Make
a lot of money.
Alex, as we wrap up, as we wrap up, let's do a little role play.
Cool.
Because you are a powerhouse, dude. And I can
appreciate it.
That you can probably do a great job teaching people how to do this well.
I love doing it, man.
I want to do a quick role play. I want to see how you would close me.
Sure.
If I am a supplement company
that
has a social media following, and I do pretty good, but I know I have a lot more potential.
Yeah.
I'm doing $85 million a year, but hey, Herbalife is doing $4 billion a year, all right? So I got a lot of room to grow.
Absolutely.
So I call you because I want to see how you can help me. You have a digital marketing company, and you're really good at it. You won Inc. 5,000 awards. You have a great team. You have all these people to back you up and to help you, and you got a lot of evidence and testimonials of people talking about you left and right, all right? I'm going to call with you on a video call, and I start the conversation. I say, hey, Alex, I'm here for the meeting. What are we doing today?
First thing you want to do for every single sales call you're on is a time and result frame. It avoids the two most ridiculous objections possible, but very frustrating if you're in a call and 30 minutes in, they're like, how much more time do we have? You have 30 minutes that you still have to go, but they have to leave. You have to redo the entire call. Result frame is, oh, I didn't know there was going to be an offer on this call, which is outrageous, but it happens. So the time result frame looks like this. 3, 2, 1. Hey, Manuel, I really appreciate your time today. Basically, what I want to do on this call is just learn a little bit more about your company and your supplement business. I know that you have goals to grow pretty significantly, but what I want to do is give you insight on this call today to help push you forward to what's going to allow you to achieve your results. If I feel that I can actually help you get the results you want with my agency, I'll be more than happy to make you an offer to work with us. If I don't feel that way, I'll be more than happy also to point you in the right direction, and we can go from there. The call will be probably like 30 minutes or so. Is that good with you?
Oh, that sounds exciting. Looking forward to seeing how you can help, Alex.
Yeah. The next frame, this is the most important frame in calls, which is the why frame. The why are you on this call frame. The framework is the idea that the most valuable thing we have in our life is our time, right? Everyone knows this, right? We've spoken about some morbid things today, and we all know everyone wants more time. We always talk about more money, but time is always more valuable consistently. When people get on a sales call with you, their mindset is, how is this guy trying to take this from me, right? How are they trying to take that from me? But that's actually not the most valuable thing. They just gave you their most valuable thing for free, which is their time. And so what you do is you frame how intentional they are with their time. And so you express, look, Manuel, I'm grateful that you're giving me your time. Time's the most valuable asset we have. Time that you're spending with me is time you're not with your friends, your family, your business, your clients. You're here on this call for a reason. Why are you on this call? So I understand and I can deliver for you. So I understand your intention. What are you here for?
I feel like I am stuck at the level that I'm at. I want to grow faster.
Yes.
I see competitors that are doing more than me, and I just don't know how to get there. And I figured that you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
There's something that I'm missing to help me grow the company to a whole new level.
Got it.
And I'm hoping that you know how to help me.
Cool. So breaking the fourth wall here, the framework of why you asked that, why you're on this call frame, it allows you to understand the intention of why someone gave you their time, their urgency as well, and the current obstacle they're dealing with. So you just expressed all of those things in terms of the problem you have, the reason you're on the call, and the urgency. A lot of times, though, what you'll realize is someone gets on it and they're like, I don't know you, you reached out to me. And meaning they have no intention, and the chance of closing them is so small that what are we even doing it for? That gives you a chance to be very intentional back. It's like, well, I'm here because I want to help you do this thing. Is that what you're for too? Because your time's too valuable to waste it. That helps transition a mindset of a prospect to be like, oh, damn, that's so true. I just wasted this time. I do want this help. When someone's very deliberate like you are in your response back, that means someone's primed for sale. What I would do in this format is understand where they come from, because there's a huge difference between someone outreaching with an opportunity, which increases skepticism, versus someone coming to me with interest. If you saw an ad that I did and you're like, I clicked on this ad and I want to know if you can help me, skepticism's still high, but not the same if we had an outreach and say, we can help you do this thing, right, because you didn't raise your hand initially saying I'm interested.
Correct.
So all that to say, that's how I'd handle the why frame. The most important element on the return is when you respond, you prime with yes by responding with confidence to what they want to hear, like this. 3, 2, 1. Hey, Manuel, I totally hear you. First of all, I want you to know you're in the right spot. Totally confident I can help your brand grow. I've done it actually multiple times with other e-com brands, much smaller than you, frankly, but that's only due to based on budgeting. I'm very confident we can help you hit your goals. I just need to better understand what your obstacles are so that I can actually tell you exactly the budgeting that you're going to need to be considered of and the timeline in which you want to hit this. But you're in the right spot. We're going to be able to help you when we work together. What you're doing is priming this person to feel confident right off the rip. I'm here for a reason. He's confident. Let's get to the nitty gritty. Now, in between this, so that we can make sure it's clear for everyone.
Also, you were sincere. You said that 100%. You're not dealing with a company as big as us.
Transparency is
the same thing. Yeah.
ACT is the method that I coach in sales. Authenticity, confidence, and transparency. Authenticity is the truth behind your words, right? I'm a big believer of being a truthful person. My name means something. My last name means something. It's something my dad was very cognizant of. There's not a lot of Schlinskys in the world. So when I'm speaking, I'm not speaking for just me. I'm speaking for my father, my mother, my two brothers, my family. And so that is a very important thing to me, that I am a man of my word consistently. Do I do it perfectly every time? Of course not. I'm imperfect. I'm fallible. But in general, that's the expectation I have for myself and for the people that I coach in sales. Be authentic. Confidence, we spoke a lot about today, but if you can't have conviction in your product, it's impossible to sell. You cannot sell. It will never happen. And then transparency is your willingness to break the fourth wall. A lot of times people try to be someone they are not on a call to try to puff their chest up. But the truth is everyone just wants to know, like, oh, you're broken just like I am. Like, everyone is on this flying rock in the middle of space pretending kind of they know what the fuck is going on. But most people really have no idea. Maybe like some very religious people, but most people have no clue and they're just trying to figure it out. They're broken in some way, but they're afraid to share it. And what I find is that transparency is the bridge, right, to connection. Vulnerability is the bridge to connection. When you're frank with someone and honest with them, it opens them up and breaks the shields that they have. And that's what happens in sales. A lot of people come with shields. This person's trying to screw me. They're trying to get one over on me. They're trying to make money. It's like, no, I believe that I can really help you. And so I'm telling you that. And here's how, by bridging the gap through vulnerability. So that's like the main method that I coach. But want to make sure everyone knows how to do this piece really quick. Once you get the front end frames done, the next frame is qualification, is just the 3 W's approach or 4 W's approach. And it's just a bridge concept. It's pretty easy. It's where is the prospect now? Where does the prospect want to be? Meaning the other side of the bridge. What's the obstacle? So the bridge is not there. They can't just walk across. Why? What's happened? What's the gap? And then how fast do they want to go over? Is it like, I want to take a rocket ship? It's I'm taking a leisurely stroll. It needs to happen yesterday. Because that level of urgency is ultimately the trigger of decision-making now. Like, a lot of people understand there's two elements of closing. There is, am I closing at an efficient enough rate? Like today, like we're closing in general, we're doing a good job in sales in general, but also, are we closing fast enough? There's a big difference between saying I close 30% of my calls in the first week versus I close 40%, but it takes 5 weeks. Mm. Most people would want to take the 30% in 1 week because timeline in which that it takes is all based on urgency. Correct. And most people miss that. Most people just focus on, this is where the prospect is, I'm making this up. They make $10 million a month, they want it, or $10 million a year, they want to get to $100 million. And the biggest obstacle is they haven't had a good agency. And so they just like skip all the urgency stuff. And they're like, well, here's how I can sell you. And then they get hit with some sort of urgency objection, whether it's, well, let's think about it when I have more money. Let's, you know, consider it later on. And then they're like, why? What happened? And it's because they forget how urgency is. Urgency is created from two things, clarity on goals and clarity on obstacles. Here's the thing. Everyone knows their obstacles. People know the problems they have. They love bitching about it all the time. Goals, though, is siphoned to really one thing. And the one thing for every single human being is, I want to make more money. That's it. That's how people sell. If you don't do any more work to identify what you want to make the money for, how does that money change you? What does it do to your team? How does it help you and affect you and change your life? 99% of salespeople are not asking that. And so what ends up happening is we just have every single person with the same goal, which is totally not true. Every single person, yes, wants to make more money, veiled as more roofing jobs, more patients, more opportunities, more growth. But in general, for what reason? Well, maybe the restaurateur that you're speaking to, he wants to open up a second location to give to his kids. That's not just more money. But if you don't do the work to find out that this guy wants to open up the second location, you're failing. If you have a dentist that's been doing this practice for 20 years, he doesn't just want more patients. He wants to hire another dentist so he doesn't have to do all the work himself.
Of course.
And you're opening up Pandora's box for them to understand like, wait. I could do something other than just say I want more money, veiled as more patients, more jobs, more et cetera. That is what urgency is created from, by giving them an alternative result that's not just more money. And I leverage this in every sales position I do. I start the training every time with like, does everyone want to make more money? And you have a group of 150 people. Yeah, absolutely, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, later on I bring it back. Close your eyes. What do you want to make more money from? Most people have no fucking clue. It's just they're built into a culture of capitalist society, which is great, of just make more. Well, what do you do when you make more? You make more.
You just make more.
Yeah. Well, what do you do when you make more? Well, then and then it just is a never ending ascension until the point where you come to either burnout completely or you're just like, I don't even know what I'm doing this for anymore. And that's so common. Most people have no idea what they're doing. That's the work in sales that makes a huge difference. That's how you create urgency. So when I talk about 3 W's, where are you now? Where do you want to be? What's the obstacle? That fourth one, what's the urgency to go from where you are now to where you want to be, is key. But you have to understand how to do sales, because when you say, hey, Manuel, how fast do you want to go from 10 million to 100 million? Everyone's going to say the same answer. As fast as possible. That's not urgency. That's not clarity. You need to do the work to get that clarity. So that's the framework.
Yeah. What are the alternative possible results? Like
100%.
You want to have more freedom. You want to have another doctor. You want to have this environment in which Absolutely. You can do or not do. You want to build Absolutely. A different business to Absolutely. Complement that one.
The more that you understand the niche, the more understand the prospect, the more you're able to bridge that transparency gap to really create urgency for them. And then very authentically, and this is the last bit, when you get to the point of selling, it comes from place of the heart. From like sincerity of like, look, Manuel, if you're telling me that you want to go from 10 to 100 million because half of your team wants to achieve a certain level of income that you think is very important, plus you want to affect the Latin American community, all while also improving your station of life for yourself and your friends and family, right? It's really important that you understand that I'm the person that can help guide you there, right? Yeah, it will cost you money. Yes, it will take time. No, it will not be perfect. But at the end of the day, if this decision is not made, there's so much more at stake than just lacking $100 million. The things that are at stake are the impact that you desire to make, the thing that you and your father had built together, the mission statement that you're pushing along. Like, this really matters to you. It also really matters to me. Yes, of course I make money on this, but it's not that I win by getting paid. I win by getting you the result. That's who I am. That's what we do. When we bring on Manuel, it's not like, cool, job done. We got the business. Let's go get another. No, the job begins. That's the difference with us. That's what we do that make us best. And that's why you need to work with us.
That's great.
That framework helps people, but a lot of people are afraid to tell people to work because they're like, oh, well, what do you think? Do you want to do this? If you start today, I'll waive a $500 setup fee. You're not here for questions. You're here to be telling someone, to prescribe them what they want. And it's very uncomfortable for a lot of salespeople. That's the job.
Yeah.
Tell them. And at the worst case scenario, if you feel like, oh, I was being too aggressive, et cetera, remember the perception comment we made earlier. And then also record your calls. It is very possible that you were too aggressive and you learned from it. But again, the stakes are so low. If you mess up on one deal because you were too aggressive in intention and perception, okay, well, then you just dial back a tiny bit. That's what it is. You failed. No big deal. But again, you're not a heart surgeon that slipped and killed the guy who has a 5-month wife pregnant, right?
That's right.
That's not what happened. You didn't sell a dentist. Guess what? The dentist will probably be fine. He'll That's probably awesome. Find a different agency and go close.
That's awesome.
That's the frame.
And the close, do you go for it on that call itself?
Always. I'm a one-call close kind of guy.
One-call close. Always. Give me your credit card. How about these agencies that are like, I'm going to send a proposal and sure that they review it. I'm going to take 2 or 3 hours to like... Would you completely?
Yeah, so if I get the objection of like, hey, can you send me a proposal? This is the framework that I always recommend and coach. 3, 2, 1. hey, Manuel, I'm more than happy to send you like a breakdown of this call. I have no issue. When I hear the word proposal, I just want to clarify like what that means to you, right? I don't provide like very like detailed PDFs with like beautiful imagery because we focus on delivering the service, right? And what we found is a lot of times when we've sent proposals in the past, it kind of ends up just being like scrolled to the bottom, whatever the price was, forgot about the call, and then kind of ends, right? What specifically are you hoping to see in a proposal or a recap that I haven't covered today?
Oh, I just want to see it with, I want to talk about it with my wife before I make a decision.
Okay, so now separate. Now what you've done is you've actually identified what the real objection was. He didn't want to see a proposal. He wanted to talk to his partner, right? He wanted to discuss what the conversation was in general. Now, some people also like have a legitimate, oh, well, I like looking at things and data, etc. You should have a slide in your sales pitch that expresses very clearly 100%. Everything that's here. And then we could talk about deposit frame in a second. But I just want to answer your objection, particularly that you said about the partner. 3, 2, 1. Hey, I completely respect that. I also have a partner as well. So it totally makes sense. I want to ask you something bluntly so that I can support you best and understand how your decision-making process works. Can I do that? Are you okay with that?
Sure.
Okay. So let's just say you were the one making a decision solely, right? I'm not neglecting that your wife has insight on this. I'm sure she does. Absolutely. And I agree. But if you were the one making the decision, would we be moving forward together? Now, this piece is key. This is how you understand how human beings act. Some people look at you and they'll give you a face like, how dare you ask that question? Like, how could you ask that question?
This is a video call.
100%.
I tell my guys, 100%. Do not make a bitch unless it's on video.
It's got to be video. Sales is three components. The words that you say, the tone in which you say them, and the visual component. Mm-hmm. If you do sales on phone only, you immediately remove 33% of a core tenet of sales. You have a huge anchor. It's not impossible, obviously. A lot of people do it. It's just way harder. Way harder. Can't see their face, their intuition, how they act. Like reading face is like a whole thing. Like it's a big thing. And if you can read someone's face on that question, they're like, why? You say this. Look, the reason I'm asking, by the way, is if you're not at the point of like, oh yeah, for sure I'm gonna do it. Your wife, who is not on this call, is not going to be able to convince you, right? And you're giving them a logical, pragmatic view of it, and they'll say something along the lines of, yeah, that makes sense. Frankly, I'm not sure. If they say, like, I'm not sure, well then, hey, we still have more work to do before you communicate with your partner. I want to get you to a place of absolute confidence because I'm there. If they do say, yes, 100% I'm sure we're going to work together, you have this opportunity now. Awesome. Let me ask you this, okay? Weird question, but it's just an interesting opportunity to consider it. What if your partner says no? You're 100% in, but your partner says no. What would you do?
I'm going to try really hard to sell her on it. I'm going to try really hard.
Okay. And if you try really hard and she says no, what would happen?
Well, I'm not going to be able to move forward.
Got it. Okay. So it's very important that they agree to. Okay. I'm absolutely totally with that. And I'm with you, by the way. I don't want to have any relationship where someone else in your team is not happy with this and then we kind of have like animosity. I don't want that at all. Is there a way that I would be able to communicate with you both so that she can have this service as well? No pressure or anything. It's just the idea of if I have the opportunity to communicate in the same way I did with you today, any of her questions can be directed at me versus kind of forcing you to try to sell on my behalf. If you felt that this call was valuable and worth of your time, I would love and have no problem doing it with her as well.
She's very difficult to put on a Zoom call.
Yeah, I know.
She's very difficult, but it makes sense.
Okay.
Because I'm 100% in.
Okay.
And I know that she needs to be in.
So here's my recommendation. So let's say you don't make it happen. You're like, I don't think I can do it, right? Like I don't think she's going to do the call. I think she's just going to want to talk with me, but I'm 100% in, right? Like, okay, awesome. So here's my thought. If you're 100% in, I want to give you a break glass in case of emergency card. Are you open to hearing this?
Sure.
Okay, here's the break glass in case of emergency. Let's put down a refundable deposit. $500, okay? Here's why. What ends up happening is if you get off this call with a $500 refundable deposit, what you've done is you've made your commitment verbally and financially, right? So that you don't have to second guess yourself because obviously a lot of times people get off calls and they're like, well, should I do it? Should I not? I don't know. When you go to your wife, the decision is so much stronger because you get to say, hey, babe, I made a commitment that I really believe in. I put down a refundable deposit, but he wants the opportunity, if you want, to speak with you in case you have any questions, because of course I wanted to respect your decision. If you're not happy, if she's not happy, I'll refund you no questions. But in this way, you're protecting your own psychological self to not have to fight yourself on whether or not this is the right decision, and you're still giving your wife the opportunity to consider whether or not she wants to do it.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. I think in the world of entrepreneurship, as you know, Alex, balls are required.
Oh, no doubt.
100%. You got to have balls to do something like that when it comes to your wife.
1,000%. And sometimes,
or your partners.
Sometimes it doesn't work.
That's right.
But what I find is the majority of the time when you're authentic about it and transparent about it with the reasoning behind it, right? What ends up happening is they either tell you the real objection, right? Because a lot of people use these objections as veiled objections because they don't have the audacity to say, you know, Alex, I don't think this is right.
The truth, right? Like,
it's very hard because they're afraid that if I say no, we're going to try to convince otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm not in a stage of ever convincing someone otherwise. Like, I respect decisions. If someone says no, that's done.
That's right.
No is a no.
They got to be on board.
But the truth is most people won't say no because they think it's easier to just give an objection, get off the call and be like, ugh. And now I can ghost.
They don't want to hurt feelings.
It's worse, ironically, to ghost than it is to say no.
It's the classic in the shopping centers, right? That they say, oh, I'll come back. 99.9999% of these people have no intention of coming back.
I do that all the time.
But you know, it's the goodness in us that 100%. Is making that because most of us are good people.
We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
The criminals, the murderers, these people are a minority.
Yeah.
Most of us are well-intentioned 100%. People. So you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings.
So I have a frame of how to help with getting no's if you're like not clear on it. At the front end of your pitch process, you can do something like this, but it has to be very authentic to you. If it's contrived, it doesn't work. So when I say it, it sounds contrived because it's not authentic in this scenario. It's a role play, but if it works for you and you feel it, say it. And it's something like this. Hey, Manuel, you know, we're going to go into this portion now of making you an offer specific to helping your e-com business grow. And I'm very confident we can help you. And I hope that in the next 10 so minutes, you agree with me. But I also want you to know this, okay? At the end, you are 100% welcome to say yes, right? And work with me. But you're also totally fine saying no. You're not going to hurt my feelings. This is not a personal thing at all. I only get to this point of the conversation when I know 100% that I could at least in some way tell the future, right? Like I know this is going to work. 100%. I believe that, absolutely. But if you don't believe that, for whatever reason, right? Whether I didn't do my job well, I didn't express it clearly, you don't like me, you're not happy that I'm bald, I don't know. Whatever it is, you're more than welcome to say no, and that's totally okay. You cool with that? Everyone will say yes, and it gives them the ability to be primed, if necessary, to say no. Now, some people will argue against saying this due to priming to have someone say no. It just, again, it just depends on
like, I think it's smart. I think it's smart and logical.
I think I like every person has slightly different nuanced process.
Very brilliant. Alex, I feel like we should be, we could be talking for many, many hours.
Yes.
This is such an important subject.
Yes.
It makes or breaks a business.
1,000%.
We're probably going to want you to do one of the workshops that we have over here, especially because we're in the same environment.
Yes.
I want my audience to connect with you. How do they connect? Because we've actually, it's an exciting part of entrepreneurship, figuring out how to effectively sell your services and how to be good at it and how to grow. If somebody wants to keep on learning from you and connect with you and your events and your things, how do they connect?
Yeah, so probably the easiest way is my website, prospectingondemand.com, because it has all of our links and everything, because now there's like 7 billion social media platforms every day coming up new.
Every day.
So we're on all of them. The only one I'm not active on professionally is Twitter. That's like my personal thing.
But are you even active on Snapchat?
No, I hate Snapchat too. No, that was like
same
college.
As me.
That was college back in the day. College Snapchats where it like disappears so that your dumb shit that you did is gone instantaneously. Yeah.
It's Prospecting on Demand, the name of your social media profiles?
No, social media profiles are Alex Shilinsky.
Alex Shilinsky. Yeah, and Shilinsky, spell it out for people.
S-C-H-L-I-N-S-K-Y.
Got it.
I do short form content every single day. Most of it's related to sales, some mindset stuff. Like I like inspiring, like that's one of my other things, but most of it's sales.
Love it. Love it. Alex, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I had like 7,800 more questions. we gotta end the podcast right here.
Love it.
But again, thank you for showing up and I'm glad to connect and we gotta do this again.
Yes, all right. Sir.
Connect with Alex if you wanna learn how to master sales, how to do better with agencies and how to do a lot more and even get inspired. All right. See you guys in the next episode.
Thanks, bud.
All right, brother.